Okay, thank you. It's a pleasure to be back here. It feels like it's not being grateful for you inviting me to talk here by making you sit and listen to a talk about string field theory. But this is what I did, and this is what I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to talk about those two papers I wrote. And those two papers of Japanese people, Takahashi and Tanimoto, and Takahashi and Kishimoto. I'm mainly going to try to sell you their idea, the construction of a classical solution of string field theory. In my first paper, I was not aware of those papers. And I made some proposal for how string field theory should look around the closed string vacuum. And then I learned about those two papers, and I connected them in my second paper. So I'll basically follow this route of explaining my idea, their construction, and putting the two together. So first, why do we want to study string field theory? And I mean, there were ideas that it's non-perturbative formulation of string theory, and I don't know if that's true, but it does seem to work and give you some off-shell information in string theory. In particular, Sen proposed that if you look at a system that has tachyons, open string tachyons, like in bosonic string field theory, open bosonic string theory, sorry. You can condense the tachyon field, and he said that the D brain should disappear, and you should just end with closed strings on flat space. And this was tested in string field theory, and in principle, you should find a classical solution corresponding to the real vacuum if you start from the D brain. And the action of that classical solution should be minus the tension of the D25 brain that you killed. And in numerical approximations, it works remarkably well. The people found the classical solution numerically, and the results are very convincing. So that's the main reason to study. Study this issue, but you can also just ask. I mean, when you go to the closed string vacuum, you're studying closed strings instead of. I mean, your theory will have only closed strings and not open strings, and so it's, for me, it's also interesting to see how closed strings arise in open string field theory, and to get a consistent picture for that, and. I mean, what I started with was this paper of Georg Restelli, Sen, and Zwieback, which seemed very interesting, but I did not really understand it. And I first concentrated on a specific part of this paper that I wanted to understand better about the Feynman rules of string field theory around the closed string vacuum. And that's how I got involved in it. So that's my motivation. So let me just give you a very quick introduction to string field theory. I'm not going to do a lot of heavy calculations today, so pictures like this will usually be enough, at least for the first half of the talk. And the action is just a cubic action where phi is a string field represented as a partition function over a half disk. Now, this half disk has two boundaries. One I denoted by red boundary, the other one by green, and I try to be consistent with those colors. The red boundary is a real boundary where I impose boundary conditions. The green is going to eventually be glued to something else. So that at the end of the day is going to disappear. There are going to be, so for whenever I want to get a number, I glue some green boundary together and sum over all the fields on this green line, And at the end of the day, I'm left only with red boundaries. So I have to explain the terms here. That's the string field, the half disk. The integration is an identification of the two halves of this green line. So if you start with a string field, this half disk, you identify those two halves, you get this disk or the conical singularity in the middle, and the partition function on this geometry gives you a number. And the star product is taking one string and a second string and gluing them along half of their green lines. And then again, you get a new string field, which has a red boundary and another green segment. The only other thing appearing in here is the BRST operator of open string, of the open string theory. And so the two terms in the action are this kind of a disk with a BRST current inserted here, and the three-point vertex, which I schematically denote here like a Mercedes sign. So that's the usual open string field theory of Witten. What happens, what does it mean to go to the vacuum, the closed string vacuum? So we say that there is a classical solution, phi naught, that describes the theory after the D-brain disappeared. And we expand the action around, we expand the fields around this classical solution, phi equals phi naught plus phi prime, and now we write the action in terms of phi prime. Apart for the classical action of phi naught, we get this new action where we have the same cubic term, but a new kinetic operator. The new Q has the old QB plus a commutator with the classical solution. So that's very simple. If you, any cubic action will behave this way. The always the highest order term remains the same. You just get corrections to lower terms in the action. And now the statement that this theory should describe the closed string vacuum, that is, there are no open strings. I mean, those are open string fields. So if there are no on-shell open strings, it means that Q has trivial cohomology. So you don't have on-shell states in this new theory. So in the picture we had before, that you know, those you have those string fields, but they're never going to appear as on-shell states. So for this classical solution was found numerically, but analytically people did not know how to solve the equations of string field theory for a long time. So people instead decided to work differently and just guess what this Q is and not worry about the fact that it's written as in this form, just guess what Q should be. And the main condition is that Q will have a trivial cohomology. There are, well, it has to square to zero. It has trivial cohomology, and it has to have some, it has to be a derivation of the star algebra to make this structure consistent. There was a simplifying assumption taken on Q by most people that it just involves the ghost fields. That makes the equations of motion for the new theory, that makes the new theory very simple because it just has ghosts in here. And in particular, under that assumption, you can prove that Q is just a midpoint C insertion. And then you get that the equations are very simple, that you have separation between the matter and ghosts. The matter equations of motion are just projector equations. Right. So yeah. So yes. So the way what I said is, if you assume that it's pure ghost, then you can prove that this is the only one, and the way they did the extra information that you they put is that the you have the classical solutions corresponding to the D brain, and when you expand around the D brain, you find the open string tachyon. And I think that's how they constrained it to be this function of C, this combination of C's. But I'm not going to take this Q. I'm not going to take the pure ghost Q. Instead, in the first part of my talk, I'm going to try to find other constraints on Q. So one constraint is that it has a trivial cohomology and that it's a derivation of the star algebra. I'm going to try to find another constraint that will tell me that it's representing closed strings. So after, let me tell you what I'm going to do. So gave you some motivation and a short introduction to string field theory and what people refer to as vacuum string field theory. My angle at the problem is through the Feynman rules of the theory. So I'm going to introduce the Feynman rules first around the D brain vacuum, and then see how they should look around the closed string vacuum, and in particular what the propagator should be, and show you how to get, in principle, closed string diagrams, the sphere diagram, and how you should calculate the Virzoro-Shapiro amplitude. Then I'm going to switch to discuss the classical solution phi naught that the Japanese group found, Takahashi and Tanimoto. So this is a formal construction of a classical solution. In many ways, it makes everything that people talked about, doesn't matter anymore because you just have the classical solution. You don't have to guess what Q is. But people did not like their solution. It wasn't well received. Their paper has very few citations. And so I'm going to use their classical solution and construct a new BRST operator, kinetic operator, around the vacuum and make a few tests of it. More than they calculated the cohomology and they found trivial cohomology. I'll show how you can reproduce from it the pure ghost one as a limit and how you derive the Feynman rules that I propose that appear from it, and that will all tie in nicely together, and I'll conclude. So I said that what I'm going to look at are the Feynman rules of string field theory, and I'm going to try to see how a closed string diagram, sphere diagram, can arise from a theory that looks like open string field theory. So the action of string field theory has a large gauge symmetry, which is usually fixed by the Siegel gauge, B naught of phi 0, where B naught is the zero mode of the anti-ghost. And so let me write it. I should have it on my transparency, but the action was phi star QB phi, and now I'm assuming that B naught of phi is equal to zero, so I can write phi as B naught of psi. And then this action, I can write like this. That's an inner product. Then this action is psi B naught QBRST B naught psi. And the only way for this not to be zero is to pick out the term proportional to C naught in QBRST. So it's the commutator of the gauge fix action is the anti-commutator of B naught and QB. So that's this guy. It's basically L naught. So the propagator is 1 over L naught, and you write it as like this, the integral over some time t e to the minus t L naught, and you draw it like in this picture as a strip of length t and width pi. And then if you want to calculate some open string scattering amplitude, you have some external states, phis. You have the interaction vertex, which is just this three-point gluing, three-string gluing. And the three-point function is going to look something like this. You have here three propagators, three external states, and one vertex. And in this way, you can construct all open string scattering amplitudes, and also closed string scattering amplitudes on the disk and on higher Riemann surfaces, as long as they have a boundary. And it works. It gives you the right result. Now, we want to do the same. We have the same kind of an action, just a different operator. We want to work with a different Q, not the BRST operator, just a different Q. But we want our Feynman rules to be spheres, not to be the disk. So you see that the problem is we want to get rid of this red line here. We want to have the same kind of Feynman rules, just with no red lines. Now, I told you that in the new theory around the vacuum, I'm not going to have external states. So I don't have to worry about the red line here. Instead of it, I'm going to have some way of putting in a closed string vertex, which doesn't really matter for what I'm going to say. So one problem is here, and that was there is a way to treat it, and that was discussed in there are vertex operators of Shapiro and Thorne, and they were studied also last year by Hashimoto and Itzhaki. But the propagator also has red lines, and that's the there are also boundaries there. And that's the thing I want to take care of. So I want to see what kind of a propagator, an open string propagator, does not have a boundary. How do we do that? So the propagator before was the inverse of L naught, 1 over L naught. And that is the that strip that I had before. Instead, I'm going to take a different combination of the Virasoro generators, the integral of t plus t bar times a function f. And let me, for now, take the function to be sine sigma. So L naught, if you look at it on the plane, it generates this radial motion. This guy, on the other hand, vanishes at sigma equals 0 and pi are those two points, 1 and minus 1, on the complex plane. So this generator vanishes there. It doesn't act there. It acts in the middle. It moves you forward, but it doesn't move you at this point, so you go around it. To get some more intuition, you can map one of those points to infinity. And then you keep one point fixed, and you move around it. So you get something like angular quantization in the plane instead of radial quantization, which we had here. Map the plane to the cylinder. Now, usually you do that, and if you have radial quantization, you get motion up and down the cylinder. But here you actually get motion around the cylinder. The motion around the plane becomes motion around the cylinder. And if you compactify this to the sphere, you get motion around the sphere. So our propagator
Do you have a sort of a global constraint that when you go all the way around, you have to come back to where you started? just looks a bit like post-timeline curves.
I'm taking any segment of this sphere. So my propagator can be any, I didn't specify what the length is of the propagator. But this is going to be what my propagator is going to look like. So this, I mean, this last picture, I mean, here you think, you usually think about radial quantization, but actually in string field theory, you usually think of this picture of the of this strip. Yeah, it's very nice because you glue segments of length pi to each other. You always have this fixed length pi of a of that green boundary where you glue things. And you And then you, in open string, you also have the additional simplification that your world sheet is flat. So you have flat world sheets except for singular points where you have in the interaction vertices. In this picture, again, you have the distance pi between the north and south pole of the orange, but you're not flat anymore. The world sheet is not flat, but it does not have a boundary. What was the boundary is now the north and south pole of the sphere. So I'm just going around, and in my when I calculate a complicated diagram, I'm going to take a bunch of these and glue them together along those lines, keeping the north and south pole glued to each other. So. I mean, it's sort of hard to do the three-point function, but it's going to be something, a three-point vertex. I'm going to glue those two from the north pole up to the equator, and then I'm going to glue this here and that here. And that's one. So I think this is a good picture. So it's the same as before, just I'm using a curved. Instead of having a flat world sheet, I have a curved world sheet. So F here will give me the metric on this world sheet. In particular, for the sphere, it's F equals sine sigma. So the metric has a sine squared sigma in it. For F equals 1, I get a flat world sheet. And I can take any F.
But I guess my question is, if you take an arbitrary initial state and just propagate it by 2 pi, on your sphere, you're back at the same point.
I didn't identify.
Oh, you're not identifying. So this is a multiple wrap sphere.
In principle, it can be a multiple wrap sphere, and it could be a more complicated Riemann surface if I do all kinds of gluings. I just take those segments, glue them in different ways. At the end of the day, I can get a sphere, or I can get something more complicated. I can get a torus by doing these identifications. I'm not imposing periodicity. What else was I going to say here? Yeah. So you see that the condition that I actually have no boundary is that F is zero. F has a zero at the boundary. And I'm going to claim that if F does not have a zero, then this should be, it's just going to be an open string with a curved metric. That should be equivalent to the regular open string. Just in a different gauge. But if F has zeros, that's going to be something singular, and it's going to give me a different answer. So, well, this is sort of what I tried to demonstrate here with the orange peel. In principle, you can then take those three guys, glue them to each other. Here is the what was the north and south pole. And then there is some way to, you basically glue this to this, glue this to this, glue this to this with closed string vertices here. And that's the thing that gives you the sphere diagram, the three-point function on the sphere. These are different representations of the same picture. This is just, if I cut each of those to do those gluings that I tried to do before, it's sort of hard, but if you cut every propagator along the equator, then you're just, all the gluings are then along the equator. You're going to have a segment of a hemisphere, and then you have to remember where to glue it back along the equator. And that is this picture of the, so this is a hemisphere. This line is identified with that line, so it doesn't have to be 2 pi. And I have some identifications here over the equator. And topologically, this is a sphere. And I'm going to claim that this gives you the sphere amplitude. The one thing. I inserted here some vertex operators along the equator. The only problem is that I have this extra point, this extra red point, the remnant of the boundary, which I don't totally understand. In principle, you still have whatever boundary conditions you had on your open strings, you still have at this point. I don't have a full understanding of this issue, and I didn't do an exact calculation of something like this. But these are vertex operators, yes, closed string vertex operators. There is a prescription on how to insert them into a string field theory diagram. I'm going to get back to these Feynman rules at the end of my talk, and you're going to see how they come about with a specific prescription, a somewhat more detailed prescription than I have here. One way to think about what this diagram means is, I took an open string diagram, a disk diagram, and I shrunk the boundary to a point. So this is a contribution, what would be a contribution from the corner of moduli space of of the disk amplitude, and should, so if I calculate the closed string, three closed strings on the disk, there is a point in the moduli space where the disk turns into a sphere, and this is what this guy calculates, and it should be proportional to the three strings on the sphere. So, no, this is a calculation in principle that can be done, but it's sort of hard, so I haven't done it. Instead, let me leave that for now and go and describe the work of Takahashi and Tanimoto, and we'll see how it all connects at the end. So this came out in last February. But I was not aware of it when I studied that propagator talked about before. And they construct a classical solution phi naught, and it's based on the identity state of string field theory. Now, the exact construction won't matter because I'm going to stop. I wrote it on this transparency, but I'm not going to actually use phi naught. I'm just going to use it to construct the new the kinetic operator around the vacuum. So their constructions involves also a function, an arbitrary function, and you multiply it by the BRST current, and you take some combination of it times the ghost, and you apply it on the identity state. The identity state is somewhat the problematic state in string field theory, but it has a precise definition. But in principle, it should be a thing that if you multiply any field by it, you go back to yourself. That doesn't exactly work, but close to it. Still, it's very well defined, and you can write it in terms of the Fox-based generators. It exists, and you can define this object. If you look at what it is in terms of oscillators, this is a reasonably well-defined object. And You can.
So is this supposed to describe closed string banking?
Yes, this is supposed to describe. So, oh, I didn't say that yet, but it is a classical solution.
Yeah. So, has this sort of solution been checked in model truncation?
Okay. So, this solution you can check formally that it satisfies the equations of motion. You can expand it in level truncation in levels and. It has finite coefficients and everything's fine. If you calculate the action in level truncation, it doesn't seem to converge to anything. It's not in the Siegel gauge, so it's not the same solution as the one that was found numerically. And the classical solution that was found in level truncation was optimized for level truncation. You solved the equations at every level. So it's clear that you're not going to get something that converges as fast as what was optimized for that system. But I didn't look at that, but Rastelli, and he's the one who pointed me out to this, who showed me this paper, and independently Martin Schnabel calculated the first non-trivial term if you calculate the action for this guy, and it doesn't work. You get very large numbers. Well, you can, formally, no, because you get an integral of, you get a zero times infinity. You get the integral of, you get an I times I, which is infinite, and then you get some two ghost fields at the same point, which is zero, so you get a zero times infinity if you try to do it formally. I don't know how to do it formally, and numerically it doesn't work. I guess one can check the equations that the equations of motion are satisfied in level truncation, but I'm sure that would work up to gauge terms, or up to terms of higher order. But so nobody knows how to calculate the action for this solution. So. That was part of the reason that this paper was not well received. I communicated recently with Takahashi, and he told me that they're still trying to calculate the action. So I assume that they tried harder. They also tried the level truncation, and also, so what Rastelli did, he found the first number was very, very large, and he gave up on it, even though he said that otherwise the solution looks perfectly good, but it's just a formal construction, and you know they just write this thing and they check it satisfies the equation. Then they don't understand it. Another problem, there is another problem with this, but let me first just.
Find a solution for any f.
It's a solution for any f. I'll get to that. So they used Finot and constructed the new BRST operator. And so that's just a function times the BRST current, any function times the BRST current, and then a correction that's some term, which is proportional to the derivative squared times c. And you integrate that. And you can ignore the fact that you had a classical solution and just start with this guy. And that's the attitude I'm going to take. And then very simply from the OPE of J and J and the J and C, you can see that this squares to zero. Because this doesn't have a commutator with itself. Yes, it does. Otherwise, the JJ will have many more terms. Now, you can do it for any function, in particular for a function being one, you just get the BRST operator, the good old BRST operator. And when you calculate the action, you're going to find zero. You should find zero, I guess. Now, they looked at a family of functions, sine squared sigma plus something proportional to cosine squared sigma. And in that case, they found that if you don't have the cosine squared term, you get that this Q has trivial cohomology and no physical states. So that was what was found in the Sekern paper of Takahashi and Kishimoto. So you see that for this function you should be describing the vacuum because you don't have a cohomology, and for f equals 1 you're in the open string vacuum. So what does it mean? Another thing they showed was that this new Q is related to the BRST operator by a similarity transformation, which involves the ghost number current. So you take the ghost current multiplied by the log of the function f, integrate, that you call Q, and then if you conjugate QBRST by e to the Q, e to the minus Q, you get this new Q. So in principle, those two guys should be equivalent because you can act with this kind of operator also on the string field, and you're just doing a similarity transformation. You did nothing. So that's why QB and QF are related to each other by this field redefinition, or alternatively by gauge transformation. And so when this object is well defined, e to the q, those two are the same. But when you have some trouble defining this object, or this object is singular, then you might get something interesting. And that exactly happens when f has zeros. When the function f has a zero, then you're trying to define here this thing is not well behaved. The log will diverge. You can't define q exactly. If you try to define e to the q, you're going to run into problems. And that should correspond to a singular gauge transformation. So in their paper, they noticed that for the function sine squared sigma, they try to define this operator by some normal ordering, and they get an infinite normal ordering constant. But this is true in general for any function that has zeros. You're trying to define here an operator. This operator is not unitary anymore. It's not invertible. Or actually, it's not unitary, but it's any of them are not unitary. But it's not invertible, and you're taking your function that has zeros, you're taking the log of it, and you're exponentiating something that is built of it. So this object, e to the q, has zeros. And this is the thing that's going to give you the extra cohomology or remove the cohomology from QB. So, I mean, this is sort of what you want, actually. It's a little confusing at first, but I mean, how do you find classical solutions of gauge theories? Well, it's complicated, so you take a gauge transformation and you hope it's a non-trivial one.
Well, but that suggests that this QF is a very different larger class in some sense. So you cannot connect the open string vacuum with the vacuum with this new gauge summation. You change this in a number. So it's unlikely that this new vacuum we should discuss is obtained by vacuum. Some new interesting vacuum, but it's not the bottom of
it. It's a new vacuum with different action. It's not like an instanton. It's more like a vortex in two dimensions. Again, you have a topological number there.
Different components of field space. Field components, non-vortices.
Yes. Yes. But I mean, you can do. I mean, with a vortex, you can do it. You can take the vortex and smear it out. Take it in.
Yeah, but then you can embed this in the smart theory, coupled with the Higgs field, it's not a singularization.
Well, I mean, it's a subtle question.
So,
I mean, I want to see what else I can say about this Q. So let me take a function. I said that this function has to have a zero. So let me take it to be zero everywhere. Well, almost everywhere, except at the midpoint. So I take a function that's zero everywhere, except for being one at a pi over two. Then the integral of f is zero, where the derivative is a delta function. So if I had this expression for Q, the BRST term vanishes. This term is a delta function squared. So when I integrate it, I get a delta of 0 times the ghost at the midpoint, basically. So that gives me that pure ghost. And you can see if you want to get a pure ghost, this is basically what you... Well, I guess there are other... No, there aren't any other pure ghost ones because there is a... I forgot to write down. There are some constraints on the function f. F has to be 1 at the midpoint. So if you want to get... if you want to choose a function that has... At least a function that just has 1, 0, then you... This is the only choice. And you want a function... If you want to get something that is just ghost, then you need a function that doesn't have any weight. So this integral is 0, and then this is the only function that is 1 at the midpoint and 0 at the boundary. So that's how you recover that. Now, I guess you can already anticipate what the next step would be. That's the Feynman rules. So that's again what I wrote before. You can take here the Segal gauge condition on the field, and you derive from a Q and some combination of the Virzoor generators, well, some kind of propagator LF, and you're going to get exactly the condition I had before, that the function has to vanish at the boundary. The only thing new you discover is that the commutator of B with a J current actually has an extra term, which is a total derivative, a derivative of the ghost current. So this, if you compare this L to what I wrote before, there are two corrections here. One is this overall numerical factor, which I did not really bother about back then. I didn't know what the measure should be. I was just worried about the type of world sheet. So you see that the world sheet will involve this function f. But the conformal field theory living on it will not be the normal conformal field theory with t. The energy momentum tensor will actually get this correction term. So what you should do is the conformal field theory calculation I described before on these kinds of world sheets made out of my orange peel. But this thing changes the central charge of the ghost system. So you should actually do the calculation with a ghost with central charge minus 2. Now, it's not a conformal system, but you're given a specific metric you should do the calculation in. So it's a you don't need conformal invariants. I mean, there should be secretly some conformal invariants, but I don't really understand it. But you have the prescription, you have the metric on the world sheet, you should do the calculation and get a number. One thing you...
The discussion you were doing had F and was
graph from the signal zero.
That's right. So I'm not totally sure what the significance is of the order of the zeros. If the single zero gives you a nice metric on the world sheet, and that's why I chose it. But it is actually it's actually singular because the function is not really sine sigma, but absolute value of sine sigma. So if you expand it in Fourier modes, you have an infinite. You have all the Fourier modes. They chose sine squared sigma, which just involves is just a combination of L naught, L two, and L minus two. And for that, they actually showed that the cohomology is trivial. My guess is that the order of the zero will be so. First, I think that the order has to be even, so I don't get this problem with the infinite. So the function is smooth, really. And my guess is that the order of the zero is, if you're starting from the vacuum and you're looking and you do this thing in reverse, the order of the zero or the pole is going to be the number of D brains. In principle, you should create many D brains. And if you look at a function with a higher order zero or more zeros on the interval, my guess is that it should correspond to a multiple D brains, either more zeros or more poles. And
the one that corresponds to pi over 2 is infinite.
Excuse me?
See if pi over 2, the vacuum.
Yes.
Supposedly has the right dimension.
Well, you can choose it. You can choose a function with any number, with any order zero, to approximate that function. At the end, an infinite, but I don't know. If you start with a D brain and you put zeros, then maybe any order of zero will get you to a description of the vacuum. But maybe if you go back and you put poles, then the number of poles should correspond to the number of D brains. I think that there should be an analytic expression for the action of the solution. My hope is that there would be an analytic expression for the action, which should be some index of the function. The dependence here, I have here a construction which depends on the function, and that's funny. I want to remove this this dependence. And actually, there is a way to do it. I don't have a transparency for that, but there is a...
Excuse me, didn't you show that the dependence on F was largely a field redefinition?
That's right.
The number of zeros.
That's right, yes.
But the number of zeros would be just different.
Yes, right.
You don't want there to be so many different solutions or something?
Well, they're all regular. I mean, they're all gauge equivalent to each other by regular gauge transformations.
With a given number
of zeros. And with different number of zeros, they're either a different description of the vacuum, or I think if you go the other way and add poles, you get more D brains. There is actually something I'm trying to do, and maybe if people want, I can describe it later. It's sort of complicated, but a way to write the theory in a way that throws out the dependence on the function f and brings and instead you just have the singularity structure of f. Only the branch cuts of log f appear in the construction, and that I think is probably the right way to think about things. But that's not totally, I don't totally understand that construction yet. So let me finish. So I studied those kinetic operators that Takashi and Tanimoto proposed based on their classical solution. And I'm really, I think those classical solutions should be taken seriously. And in the least, I mean, even if you can't find, if you can't calculate the action, the classical action for those classical solutions, all those Qs should be regarded on the same footing as the pure ghost Q. And I mean, there is a very large literature where people do all kinds of things with this pure ghost guy. And in principle, all these things should be done again with this Q, with these Qs. And they're more complicated because they involve matter fields, but they're less singular. And there's probably a lot to be learned from looking at them. So what they found is that there is trivial cohomology for this particular function. And you can, and you, they calculated only for that function, but they checked that it was trivial for that function. But I told you that if you take a function that does not have any zeros, that's a regular gauge transformation. So any function with these zeros would be okay. Function with more zeros. They actually also calculated functions with more zeros. They calculated sine squared of n times sigma, but I'm not totally sure. I basically don't understand what that means, so I don't exactly understand. They claim that those have also trivial cohomology. No. Well, what I'm saying is that poles should correspond to a zero is killing a D-brain. You had here only one D-brain to kill, so you can add as many zeros as you want. I don't know what it's going to do. But if you start instead from the vacuum and you want to go back, it corresponds to the inverse function. So a pole should...
What geometry corresponds to? For sine, you get sphere.
For
1 over sine, for example.
Well, no, this is sine squared, so it's not the sphere, but...
If you took your sine, you want sine.
Yes.
You got the sphere.
Yes.
But if you take 1 over sine,
if you take the metric is just a.
So will I get boundaries?
I don't understand the Feynman rules when you take a zero which is not at the boundary, that makes your world sheet have.
I have no zeros. I have poles.
Yeah. Okay. No. But no. Okay. But take. I mean, take, for example, the function sine squared n times sigma, just to see what happens. Then you get a world sheet that looks like that. And if you say take a pole, then are you starting with the open string vacuum and taking a pole, or are you starting with a closed string vacuum and taking a pole? If you're starting with a closed string vacuum and taking a pole, then you just return to F equals 1.
Well, let's start with the open string vacuum. Let's start with 1 and go to 1 over sine.
Yes. Well, then I think you already have a boundary at a... You already have a boundary at the boundary. We want to... You need to put a pole somewhere else, I guess.
The conjecture is correct that somehow I should get Champagne factors.
Yes, I don't understand. Yeah. I think take a function that has a pole not at the boundary, not one, but a pole at a finite location. And then the world sheet somehow blows up there, and it's going to be a world sheet. So the world sheet before for function equals 1 is like that, and this world sheet is going to look something like that. So it will have some disconnected components, but each of those going to infinity, that's going to be the world sheet. So I would so probably those corresponds to extra boundaries. And I don't understand it. The function being singular, I mean, f is these functions just, or these classical solutions are gauge transformations, but you can really see that for a singular f, there's a singular gauge transformation. That is nice. And the Feynman rules that you get from this Q gives you world sheets without boundaries and agrees with a guess that I had before. And you can also recover the singular pure ghost kinetic operator. So, okay, what I said before is that there is a way to use the singular field redefinition for a singular F. Even though it's singular, you can just go ahead and try to do it and relate this non-trivial QF to the regular BRST operator. But the price, but there was, you cheated somewhere, and the price you have to pay is that you change the gluing rules, the star product, and the integration. So you can act, there is actually, so the way we usually think about it is that you work with the same kind of a theory, but a new kinetic operator. What I'm proposing is that there's another way of looking at things where you keep the same kinetic operator, the QB, which is a nice object, but you change the gluing rules on the world sheet. So you're working with somewhat different rules on doing world sheet calculations. Yes.
How would you recover the spectrum in this new picture? Like, for instance, see if there are no open strings.
Well, the spectrum is not going to be the cohomology of QB anymore. I haven't worked it out yet, but it's a combination. The modification you do to those gluing rules are insertions of extra ghost fields. So it's going to be a QB with some extra ghosts on the fields should be zero. One possibility, I haven't checked that yet. The check that the cohomology is trivial is actually, the cohomology is not totally trivial, but it's moved to a different ghost number. So the physical fields in string field theory have ghost number 1. And for this function, they can show that the cohomology of this guy is the same cohomology as you had before, same fields, but moved to ghost number 0 and minus 1. So they're not physical fields anymore. My guess is that this is what happens here, is that just you shift the ghost number. And so you get that the...
So physical states have a different ghost number?
I think physical states have the same ghost number, but your kinetic, the thing you calculate is instead of QB of phi, QB times a ghost on phi, and therefore the physical, you move them. And there was a thing that still would really seal it, this whole construction, is if we can calculate the classical action. That's it. Yes, I tried to do that a little bit, and I didn't know how to do it. It's a nonlinear equation. In principle, maybe, but in practice, it's hard.
Why is it a nonlinear equation? But can't I put anything in Siegel gauge just by subtracting something from it?
Subtract 1 over L mod B on B mod B.
Well, the gauge I mean, the gauge transformation is, it's not a linear gauge transformation. Once you start with, I mean, when you start with a vacuum, you have a linear gauge transformation.
It's linear, but it's not true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Oh, you're right. Is there no more questions?